Hey, Fanboy Nation.
This is your pal, Daffy Duck, and you're watching.
You're watching.
We're watching. You're watching Fanboy.
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 A fanboy, etc.
Fanboy Nation.
Dad, I assume Tom.
You've seen this lady on Queer as Folk, Candy, The Glorias, Moonshot, Faceless After Dark, and so much more. She's currently in the series, or the BET series, excuse me, Average Joe. Catherine Barnes, how are you today?
I am not bad. How you doing?
I can't complain. It's a nice chilly day by the beach, so it could be much worse.
Nice. You in California?
I am. What about yourself?
I am in Atlanta today.
So you got it buggy and muggy.
I would confirm that for you if I had stepped outside yet today.
You're just being sheltered in place at this point.
Correct. Yeah.
Well, if you're going to do that, the humidity of Atlanta is the place to do it.
I mean, avoiding it, sure, yeah.
So take us into this series on BET Plus that you're a part of, Average Joe, with Dion Cole.
It's going to be great, man. It's darker than I thought it was going to be. So I had been calling it a dark comedy, but I think it's like a little more dramatic with funny elements. And it's about Joe Washington, who Dion plays. And Joe finds out that his recently deceased father had been stealing millions of dollars from the Russian mob. And then they show up because they think that Joe and his family knows where it is.
You know, if you're going to steal millions of dollars from anybody, I think that would be the last group of people I'd be taking it from.
It's up there, yeah.
Right up there, you know, the Catholic Church, the Mafia, you know, the American Mafia, the Russian Mafia, so on and so forth going down. Not messing with the mob or, you know, extremely large organizations.
You'd think, but they don't write television shows about people who make great decisions all the time.
This is true. You want to be entertained. That's why reality TV is such a huge success.
Yeah, I guess that. I understand that. That's, you know, people in real life also making insane decisions.
Listen, I have a huge addiction. I'll let you finish taking your sip before I mention it. It's a 90 Day Fiance thanks to the pandemic.
I know so many people who are in your exact situation. Pandemic converts. I get memes about it all the time and I'm piecing together bits of information, but I'm tragically not a follower myself.
No, we're the tragedy. We're the Greek tragedy in being followers of it. My addiction came because I was changing the channels, put the remote down to go get a glass of water, and I heard this very raspy, obnoxious Southern woman bellowing at this African man. And I said, "Dear God, what is this?" And then that's how the addiction was born.
Sure. It's probably a lot of people's stories.
It is a safer addiction other than, you know, alcohol and cigarettes.
Yeah, you got me there. That's, I would have to agree.
Listen, I'm trying to defend myself in some manner.
Well, listen, live your life. I'm not judging.
I don't know, that look on your face that says otherwise.
I know, but my face just looks like that. It's because I don't blink a lot, is what we've gathered.
Is that by force of habit? Like you just won a bunch of staring contests as a kid or?
No, I think I might just naturally have a low blink rate.
Okay, let's go with that. I don't know what to say at a low blink rate.
I have a friend who's an autism researcher, and that's a metric that they look at sometimes in measuring children's focus.
I had no idea.
I hadn't either, and now it's somehow in my lexicon.
And are they trying to diagnose you as such? Like, I don't understand the connection, or is it just...
I just know about the term blink rate as a result.
I know I've had a handful of concussions. And so sometimes I have a hard time looking people in the eye just because it's so bright or...
What happened?
Headache from it. Wrestling.
Oh.
You know, you get dropped on your head one too many times, it happens. And then someone thought I was autistic. I was like, I'm not autistic, I'm concussed. And they're like, what's that? I was like, you know what autism is, but you don't know what a concussion is?
It's so interesting. There's all kinds of people and all kinds of ways we can get information. That's very interesting.
You know, traumatic brain trauma is one of them, so.
Sure. Yikes.
Listen, you have to make light in this life. We're far too serious.
Yeah, I can get on board with that. I don't know that there's not a lot I won't laugh at given the right circumstance and punchline and premise.
That's good. You have a sense of humor. Most people don't anymore.
You think? I think most people do.
I think a lot of people have lost it.
I don't know. Maybe. But there's no way for us to measure this.
But I also tend to laugh at inappropriate times. Like church is one of them. I get in trouble at laughing in church from time to time.
Sure. Hard not to. You're not, it's forbidden.
It's not forbidden. God has a sense of humor. He made humanity. take a, so average Joe, we're just having fun with this, but so an average Joe, your character is Ariana. You're in 7 of 8 of the 10 episodes. You know, when you get the call for this series, you've described it a dark comedy, but it's a, let's refer to it as a darker dramedy at this point.
Yeah, I think that's right.
You know, what was it like getting the call that you're finally cast in the series?
It was great. I was delighted. I connected with the character right away. Sorry, her name's Arena. Not the extra A in there. It's just a Russian name. But I did not know when I was cast how large the role was going to be. That was strategically secret. So I was excited to be working. I was excited to be playing this character. It seemed like a challenge. It seemed like one of my most substantive roles to date at the time. And that was before I knew it was coming. So it was a slow burn figuring out that I was going to keep coming back, mostly from people around the set kind of being like, wow, what a great part. And I'd be like, is it? Okay. Fantastic. Tell me more. What do you know?
It's definitely a departure from the bloody model in the Adult Swim Yule Log.
Oh no, is it?
Well, since it's more often that you're playing this role, I think it is.
That's true. Yes. I had about a 3 second part. You probably worked for like a half hour that day.
The check cleared. You worked for half an hour. You did something right. So that's all that matters.
Yeah. And I love those guys. You know, that like core group of people who are working over at Adult Swim, they're just so funny. And I love working with them. I would do it any day.
Adult Swim puts out some great stuff. There's some new things coming out this year. So hopefully you'll get a call back for something.
Yeah, we'll see.
Maybe a stint on, what's it called? Rick and Morty season 6 or 7.
Oh man. That'd be the dream, huh? Every actor in Hollywood must be gunning for a voice job on that.
I think every actor is gunning for a voice job anywhere at this point, especially with the looming strike.
Yeah, it's a fair point.
What? You want me to come to Australia and do some voiceover work? All right, I'll be there.
Yeah.
But being able to perform in a series like this, especially where most of the talent are known for their comedic chops, it's interesting that they went darker with this.
Yeah, it is. I find this a lot. Go ahead.
I was going to say, is it a bit more interesting when the actors tend to be more comedic and are doing a dramatic role because there's so much darkness within comedy, or to find humor within darkness, that it's easier for comedic actors to transition to a more dramatic role than, say, the other way around?
It's a good question because, you know, I've seen it done extraordinarily both ways, and I've seen it done with less than desirable results both ways. But there is something about the math and the timing and the listening in comedy that makes you, I think it kind of trains you to have a sense of like reactivity and listening and like what the scene looks like as a whole. And so I think that it's just good skills for actors to have in general, and they can totally be translated to drama, even if you're not hitting a punchline. And also it's such a, I don't know what the adjective is, but it's like kind of special when you are laughing your ass off and then suddenly something happens and you're like devastated, but it's the juxtaposition of the two things in such rapid succession that I think like has such an emotional impact. So I love drama as drama. I love comedy as comedy, but when you're putting those two together, I think it makes for like a real roller coaster sometimes. And I think that's a bit of what the creators had in mind here, although you'd have to ask them.
Well, we'll get to them at some point, but I'm enjoying my conversation with you. And interesting enough, how Joe is doing some interesting shenanigans within the series.
Yeah, for sure.
These roles that come around, you know, this isn't like an average role where you just get, and no pun intended with this being average Joe, that they just come around every day. Like there's something unique about this role and about this show that not everyone gets a chance to play something like this. Like how do you decide where, you know, you follow the direction to the T versus going a little over the top versus getting a little darker when need be in developing the character?
You know, it's a little tricky because something like wonderful, but a little inexplicable happened with Arena, where I just read the audition for the first time and like she just kind of jumped to life right within me. It wasn't a lot of cerebral decision making about what that was going to look like. And so I kind of, it served me well in getting the job. And so I kind of just clung to like riding on instinct for most of it. So it wasn't like, like I said, it wasn't a lot of like agonizing over whether to be dark or whether to be funny or neutral or whatever. I mean, of course I'm taking direction on set, but I don't know. I feel pretty lucky. It seemed like they trusted me to just let Arena kind of breathe. And then of course they would tell me when they needed something different.
I was reading a bit more of your bio where you're talking about being an actor that this jumps out at you. When your parents seem to have had other plans for you and wanting you to become an architect, or at least having three children that were architects, are both your parents in that field as well? Or
yeah, they both went to architecture, engineering school, things along those lines. And my dad is now a chief engineer for the state government, and my mom is a calculus teacher, professor. And I don't get me wrong, this is so unrelatable. I love math. But they, you know, they were so, I make jokes about it all the time because it was kind of like the family business to like go get an architecture degree or an engineering degree or something along those lines, but they were so open to whatever we wanted to do. Now, that's not to say I didn't have the conversations of like, are you sure you want to be an actor? Like, what about this? What about that? Over and over for years. But yeah, they were pretty supportive, and they are very supportive now.
So was it you or your sibling that was the one that disappointed them first in going into acting instead of architecture?
That would have been me.
Ah, okay.
Oh, yeah.
And then your other sibling, they're like, you too? Where did we go wrong?
Yeah, exactly. So my brother became an actor, I want to say somewhere around 2014. And he started working right away, and we've kind of just been on this journey together, which is, it's really nice to have him, you know.
And have you guys worked together on anything?
Couple short films, couple of 48-hour film projects, yeah.
Oh,
but no, it was great. It was a great learning experience. We did a few of them for a few years.
And did you guys learn how to tolerate each other more so this way and actually get along as adults in comparison to when you guys were kids?
Totally. Yeah, we didn't fight that much when we were kids, and so we're always fighting a little bit. But yeah, we get along like house on fire. I love my family.
Well, that's fantastic. And then your other sibling went into the family business.
Kind of, yeah. She got her architecture degree. She's extraordinary. She's, you know, was building houses for disenfranchised and marginalized women in Alabama. And now she's working to, you know, shelter the unsheltered population in Rhode Island. She's killing it.
Wow, that's fantastic.
She's definitely the favorite child.
So she's the favorite child is what you're saying.
Oh, yeah.
But now when you start making the mega bucks, you can hire her to design your dream house and win-win.
Exactly.
Keep the money in the family. You got the nice house that you wanted. She gets to use her architectural degree, and then your parents get to come over and go, see what my money has built.
Look what I've done.
Yeah.
Look at my legacy. Yes.
Were you like an athletic kid? Because I know you were a dancer, which takes a lot of athleticism in and of itself. But how do you make the transition from dancing to acting?
How did I do that? Through musical theater, probably, like everybody else who follows that path. But no, I played all kinds of sports when I was a kid. I did a lot of soccer for like, I don't know, 15 years. Softball. I've been skiing since I was little, and I love that. I will ski until my legs fall off. I was dancing when I was really young too. And I think it was just like school musical theater. You know, you've got to dance. You know, you've got to sing a little bit. I've been like listening to some musical soundtracks. My mom had always taken me to musicals. So yeah, I think it was like a pretty easy transition.
So are you one of those musical theater kids that will just break out into song at any given time for no reason whatsoever?
Absolutely not. No, can't.
So we can keep the conversation rolling.
Yeah. If it's a Celine Dion song, maybe.
Okay.
But it's not a chance.
So long as you don't sing the Titanic song on a cruise ship like a bunch of people do during karaoke, we're golden.
I mean, that's such a hard song to sing at karaoke because it's both so triumphant and such a downer. So I don't know who's making choices like that, but I can't say that I wouldn't.
But why on a cruise ship? Like, cruise ship karaoke should not have like the boat sinking song.
I know. I want to be able to defend them because like I believe in a world where people can sing Celine Dion wherever and whenever they want. But that's pretty tough.
That one is like, you have to pick the right location for it.
Yeah, you gotta be cognizant.
So what is your favorite all-time musical then?
I think Wicked probably had the biggest impact on me. I lost my mind when I saw that show. It was my first Broadway show. It was the first time that I ever, gosh, it almost like in retrospect feels like an instance of Stendhal syndrome where I just like burst into tears at the art. I was young when I saw it, like 12 or 13. And the song that closes out Act One hit and like the sensory overload and the majesty and the talent, I just like lost my mind. Very inspirational.
So is this the stage play that you want to be a part of on Broadway?
I don't know if I have the stamina for an 8-show week of that high E, honestly. No, low E, whatever it is. That requires some exceptional talent, and I would love to be there at some point, but not right now.
Well, you got this TV series on BET Plus, so something's going in the right direction for television.
Definitely. And I had just as much of a blast doing that as I do in theater.
For people that don't realize the difference, I mean, they'll say acting is acting, but in theater, you have to be bigger than life and grandiose so the people in the balcony and in the upper tier can see you.
Mm-hmm.
In television, you have to reel it in and make it more intimate. How difficult is that transition from being boisterous and bombastic for the people in the upper seats versus more intimate and reserved for, you know, well, at this point, a 70-inch TV in somebody's living room?
Yeah, I mean, it's no joke. You are right about the acting is acting of it all. I mean, the work is the same, and then the technique and the execution is the difference of it. I honestly, it's at this point, I have a bit more of a difficult time getting 400-seat theater big. That takes a little bit more to whip myself into that. It doesn't take a lot for me to contain for the screen. But it's, I mean, that kind of thing, it's just so much warming up, so much vocal technique, so much movement technique. You got to stay sharp. You got to stay, like, you got to keep your endurance up. I mean, this, even just delivering a monologue in a house that size requires a lot of energy. So yeah, it's a task for sure.
I don't think I'd have the memory for an entire play.
You think?
I don't think so. Not at this point. I'd be flubbing lines all day long.
Oh, that's so funny. I feel like my whole brain is just filled with like whole plays and like dead butterflies.
Okay, explain the dead butterflies one.
I don't know. It just came to me. I'm thinking of just like cobwebs around like slumped off words from a plays page.
This sounds like you could actually turn this into a play about just some lady that sings about collecting dead butterflies.
Oof. Yeah, we'd have to find the conflict, find the drama.
I don't know, some sort of Sweeney Todd type thing.
All right, I'll think about it.
Yeah, give everybody something to do during these downtimes.
Yeah, that's fair.
You know, the writer's strike is going on right now, and there is perhaps a looming actor's strike coming. Does that affect anything that's already in production that you're working on, or will that come to a complete standstill as well?
Not for me. And I've had some stuff, you know, come across my desk that said like, oh, don't pay attention to these shoot dates. They're going to be pushed because of the strike, et cetera. I've got a couple of friends who've been hearing rumors. I know for sure that some things have shut down preemptively or we're having trouble with insurance. Has not affected me personally at the moment other than, you know, I feel like a significant portion of my energy is invested in making sure the strike is effective.
Making sure everyone gets what's coming to them.
Absolutely.
And that sounded like very threatening. So making sure what's owed to them. And that's still
what they deserve for sure.
Get what they deserve to be paid for. Let's put it that way.
Yep.
The language I'm using comes across as somewhat threatening. That's not fair. So we're trying to figure out the right words to use in this regard.
Everyone gets, no, you're so right. Everything's so threatening. Oh man.
We're trying to make it sound as friendly as possible without being hostile.
That's the project of my whole life.
You sound like a hostile person. You seem relatively pleasant.
Yeah, I'm delightful. But again, the not blinking and the voice, it's the villain streak.
You know, is your dream job to be a supervillain at some point?
I already did it.
Which one?
Average Joe, baby.
I'm talking like Marvel DC level supervillain.
Oh, yeah, that would be killer.
Like being Russian assassin villainous is like a dream I would have imagined already, but I'm talking like full-blown, like super-powered villain.
Intergalactic, yeah. That would be amazing. Put me on the wires. Let's go.
All right. So in that regard, what would be your ideal villainous powers?
Is it telekinesis, where you can move things with your mind?
Yes.
I want that.
That power does have villainous properties. There are certain powers that like make sense for villains, and there are certain powers that make sense for heroes. And I think telekinesis would be one that's villainous.
He's technically not new.
What's our first course of action?
We are going to push his ass on the first.
No,
I don't know where that's coming from.
Well, that's you.
Couldn't be me.
Burger.
Melissa.
What?
I don't know. Something's playing in the background.
It went unmuted. My bad, y'all.
It's all good.
Get us a copyright strike, Melissa.
I know. I'm sorry. I have all this stuff happening. Never mind. It doesn't even matter. Continue.
All good.
I mean, don't get RC going. It's going to be, go ahead.
So yes, telekinesis is definitely a villainous power.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, it's no like murdering people with your mind, but.
True. You know, but I think mind control would be an even more villainous power.
Oh yeah, but that's so cheap. You're going to win a battle that way? Come on.
You know, it'll work for some people.
I know. I have a very strong ethical take around that, I guess.
Well, we'll save that one for a later date just so we don't get you in trouble, especially with the looming strike.
Yeah, can't be writing right now.
Well, that, and we also can't get anybody in trouble and going, huh, so she's on strike and the contracts are up. Let's see how we can, like, work this against her. You know, we don't want to see any of that.
Oh, that's funny. Yeah, no, absolutely.
You know, actors tend to be very sensitive people and hold quite a few grudges. So, you know, we want to make sure nobody's got a grudge against you.
Oh, gosh. I wonder if anyone does. Who can know at this point?
Other than your sister.
No, my sister loves me.
So you say.
I'll text her right now. Prove it to you.
I believe you. But it would be a funny message to go, what do you
want? Hey, you love me, right? And she's like.
Well, are you the older one or younger sister?
I'm older.
And then you'll just get back, why, what do you need?
No, I would say that. If I just got a random text that was like, hey, you love me. I'd be like, excuse, are you in jail?
The beautiful part with your sense of humor is that it works phenomenally for a Russian spy.
Thank you. Lovely thing to say.
No, it's because I have a lot of Russian friends and they typically have, you know, a very straightforward, like deadpan sense of humor. And I think that's just because that's the way their language is. And the fact that you could translate that into an American delivery of that sort in your own personal life and then move it into a Russian performance just adds to the authenticity of the character.
Thank you. Yeah, there's such, oh gosh, I could go on and on about the way like inflection and prosody and even just where the sound is placed in your mouth is like crucial to character and, you know, in conjunction with accents and stuff, because it's, you know, these things are patterned, right? It's not just on an individual basis. Language does a lot to impact that as well. And I think in turn impact emotional expression.
And have you gotten any of those obnoxious critics that'll sit there and go, she's supposedly playing Russian, but we all know that accent's Polish.
Yeah. My dialect coach and, but no, she's great. Everybody on set who knew better would stop me, correct me if they needed to. I drilled this stuff really hard. You know, Pasha Lishnikov is my scene partner and he is the most Russian person I've ever known in my entire life. And so sometimes, you know, if I was against something wrong, he'd be like, no, what's that? Make that sound again. Stop that.
So even your co-stars are correcting you.
Only the one. He's the only one I'd let.
Based on intimidation factor or respect or both?
Respect for sure. You know, TV moves at such a fast pace. I needed all the help I could get.
Right. And this is 10 episodes. You're in what? 8 of the episodes?
7.
7 of the episodes. Mm-hmm. So you're still in, you know, 3/4 of the series, you know, and as you said earlier, you were kind of scared that you didn't know how much further the role would go for you. You know?
I wasn't even scared. I just thought, I mean, they had guaranteed me 2 episodes, like 3 weeks long. And I was like, great. I'm happy to do it. I've never been in more than 1 episode of anything. I was like, still, you know, over the moon. And then it just never stopped.
And they liked you enough to keep it going for you.
Yeah, either that or it was planned from the beginning, but nobody will tell me.
That hush hush.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, it's like Star Wars level secrecy.
Yeah, definitely Star Wars level secrecy.
We got to build it up more so than anything. So yeah, let's keep it like that. Star Wars level secrecy.
This Average Joe is the Star Wars of our time.
Average Joe is the Star Wars of regular people stealing from enlarged organized crime families.
Okay, here we go. Average Joe is the Star Wars of Pittsburgh.
Star Wars of Pittsburgh. Okay, I can roll with that. I've never been to Pittsburgh. I'll have to take your word for it. But...
moseyed on through. It's where the show takes place.
Well, let's be honest. You're from Rhode Island. You have to cross over into the next state just to get anywhere in your own state. Like the freeway doesn't run straight through Rhode Island.
Yeah, you do sometimes have to go through Massachusetts for a hot second, depending on what highway you're on.
You guys can't even keep your own interstate.
We were gracious enough to lend it to Massachusetts. Thank you.
So you're saying Massachusetts needs all the help it can get?
I've always said that. And I always will. Oh my God, I'm going to have the Massachusetts mob coming after me now.
All the Celtics fans are just going to bum rush you at this point.
Hey, I'm a Celtics fan.
Okay, well then they'll be nice to you.
Yeah, yeah, I went to Johnston High School in Rhode Island, and so Danny Mazzulla was our coach for eons. He's a Johnston institution, so you know everybody back home is just so happy for Joe.
Looks like Boston has a chance with everything to keep building and growing apparently under Joe.
I hope so.
What's it like to? Did you know him personally or
Danny?
What's it like to know somebody personally like that and then see where they are today?
Oh, so I didn't know Joey. But it's incredible. And it's just so moving. You know, Danny loved his kids so much. And he, like I said, he was just a sports institution for decades. He knew everybody in the town. Everybody loved him. He shaped so many young people's lives. And his death was really hard. It was like a significant loss for the whole town. And it's just so bittersweet's not quite the right word, but to see Joey, like what feels like carrying on his dad's legacy is just pretty, pretty beautiful.
I dig it.
Yeah.
All right. I'm going to ask you something that is a ridiculous question that I don't think I've ever asked anybody on the record before.
Okay.
Now that you've been in more than one episode in something and you've been in multiple episodes, and you're going to start getting recognized. What is your don't you know who I am tantrum moment in the most ridiculous of places?
I had like 8 different impulses just hit me at once. All right. I think I got to go with the Patti LuPone. Who do you think you are? And I think it's going to be, oh my gosh. I think it's going to be at this place on Federal Hill called Roma where I go for lunch every single day when I'm in Providence. And I'll throw myself to the ground, screech Patti LuPone's line.
And that's just because they forgot to bring you more breadsticks or?
They were out of octopus.
Whereas mine would just be at Taco Bell.
I really do miss Taco Bell.
I'd feel bad for the employees, but it just has to be someplace absolutely crunch. Ridiculous that it doesn't make sense.
Totally. I'm just thinking about Taco Bell.
Apparently it's off the diet menu at this point.
I'm just getting too old. It's going to kill me at some point.
If you're going to go happy.
I know. I know. That's what Zaxby's is for.
I don't think I've been there.
They have this chocolate chip cookie that I dream about sometimes.
The intensity of a chocolate chip cookie dream?
Yeah, man.
As things continue to pan out for you and your career is on this upward trajectory, what is it like to know that your parents aren't still trying to push you into architecture and going, okay, now we can relax a little more?
I mean, I do need to qualify. They weren't pushing, but...
nudging.
It's great. It's great. I mean, some of like the greatest times I have with my family are when we're sitting in front of the TV together, just like watching something. And so I know how much joy entertainment brings them and how it connects us as a family. It's really great to just like have everybody on board for that. You know, I mean, gosh, some of the times that we've had, like, you know, when my brother had a movie come out, we'd like gather around as a family and just, like, my mom would be crying corner. It's just, yeah, it means the world, you know? I'm not doing it for their validation, but I love when they're happy.
Well, see, I come from an ethnic family, and, you know, you had to get your master's degree before you could pursue anything else that you wanted in life, type deal.
Yes.
Yeah. What's the one thing that you showed your parents that you were most proud of that you almost felt disappointed that they weren't as excited as you? And what was something that they got more excited about something that you've done that you're like, really, this is the one that you lost it over?
This isn't about my parents. This is about my aunt and uncle, who I'm very close with. And I was watching that Adult Swim movie with them because when it came out, the marketing was all around faking out your friends. And suddenly this Yule log turns into a horror film. And I didn't tell them I was in it. Again, it was a 2-second thing, but we were just like watching it around the holidays. And they're like, oh my God, this movie's so weird. And then my scene popped up And they were just like, we're still watching this movie. And my cousin was like, wait, was that you? And my aunt was like, what? Oh my God, go back, please. All right, I guess we'll, oh, congratulations. It makes me laugh to this day. Go back. My parents thought it was really slick that Bette Midler in the first movie I did. I love Bette Midler, so do they. And so I should have known, but they were like, ooh, you did it, kid.
They're like, that's it. You can retire now.
Yeah, exactly.
Sometimes that's all it takes. It's like, no, I got my one. I'm done. Like the lady that wrote, what was it called? To Kill a Mockingbird. What did it take, like 70 years for her to make a sequel book or 50 years or whatever it was?
I used to find it, yeah.
And it's like, you gonna write anything else? No, I got a major bestseller that they're making all the kids in school read. I'm retired.
I really respect that. I am insatiable, unfortunately.
Whereas I'm that lazy that if I wrote one bestseller that'd be selling for the next 60 years, I'd be like, nah, I'm good. See you later.
Well, maybe it's not laziness. Maybe you're just free now.
Okay, let's go with free. Because I do know, I do often say this, that when I do finally retire, I'm walking to the edge of the Huntington Beach Pier and chucking my phone into the ocean.
Yeah, it's pretty aspirational, huh? I always say that when I retire, it's going to be because I died on stage at age 125.
That would be amazing.
In front of people. Really,
while just belting out the soundtrack to Wicked.
Not sure if that's going to be it. I'll keep you updated.
Okay. Sound of Music.
I don't know if there will be singing, let's say. But if it was the Sound of Music, that would be the thing that my mom was the most excited about.
It would be Sound of Music?
Yes, we are a Julie Andrews household.
I take it SOB wasn't on the regular playlist. The one movie in the early 80s where she shed her Mary Poppins image.
My mother prefers the Mary Poppinses and the Sound of Musics and Victoria's, you know.
You have to give me credit for at least knowing SOB.
I do, deeply.
I'm pulling out all the classics. I pulled out CPO Sharky, which is a show with Don Rickles from the early 80s or late
70s. Oh, wow.
We had to have a Navy tie-in, and that was my Navy tie-in to the person. So
nice.
We're going to pull out all the obscure classics.
I love that. I love learning an obscure fact.
All right. So what's something obscure about you besides the not blinking part?
I just burned off some of my hair. So I'll go with this, that I know how to eat fire.
You know how to eat fire?
Yeah.
Apparently not well if you're burning your hair off.
It was really windy. Now I can do it well, but I didn't do it smartly. Not that thing. You're not supposed to do that in the wind.
Don't eat fire in the wind. That is the big takeaway from today.
If you learn nothing else in this lifetime, don't do it.
And how did this circus stunt become part of your life?
So I went to Los Angeles for the first time for my birthday a few years ago.
My condolences.
Well, it was
Southern California, so it's okay.
It was during the pandemic, like during the first year. And everything was closed, and I was like, what am I going to do in Los Angeles? And there was like one Airbnb experience available during the times I was there, and it was like, learn how to eat fire. And I was like, that seems like something I would absolutely do and know how to do. Let's do it. And I fell in love with it right away.
And now on the next season of American Horror Story, we found your role.
Call Ryan Murphy. Let's go.
You know, I would rewrite the story. The next time you tell it, just say that you learned it from a homeless guy on Venice Beach.
I will take that into consideration. Let me see what I can come up with.
Okay. You know, we got to twist it a little bit. You know, the facts can't always be as exciting as the fictionalized version.
I already told you, honey, my head is only full of plays and butterflies. I can't keep like lies in there.
This one will write it down so it becomes true.
All right, fine.
It'll be in the unauthorized Catherine Barnes autobiography.
This is the play.
Yes. And it has to be the unauthorized autobiography.
Yes, I absolutely do not authorize this.
Yeah. You know, it's like the Weird Al movie, you know, the the Al Yankovic story. And then just the fact that it was a parody movie about a guy's parody music career was absolutely phenomenal.
I think it's brilliant. Just iconic art out of everyone involved. Let's go.
Yeah, they had to do that with Weird Al's life, though. Speaking of architects, actually, Weird Al is one. Yeah, he has an architecture degree from Cal Poly.
That's awesome.
Yeah. So they had to fictionalize his life because his life is so vanilla and compared to everybody else that, like, you know, he has to go rescue Madonna from a drug lord.
That's so funny. Wow. Yeah, I'm really into this trend of, like, these pseudo-autobiographical subversive parody. Like, they're a genre unto themselves. Like, the Unbearable Weight of Massive Talent blew my mind. More of that, please.
That deserved far more recognition than it got.
I think it deserves Oscars.
Yes.
It's one of my favorite films. Oh my God, I could watch that every day.
Nicolas Cage is absolutely brilliant.
Greatest.
Would you like to do a film with Nick Cage in that manner?
Absolutely. In a heartbeat.
And whose parody life would it be though? Because we've already done Nick Cage's and Weird Al's obviously had his. So now you and Nick Cage in a parody of whose life?
Phil Collins.
The guitarist from Def Leppard or the drummer from Genesis?
The drummer from Genesis.
We had to be specific, so.
Wow. What a question.
You wanted obscure facts, so.
I'm so impressed.
Thank you.
Yeah, definitely Phil Collins of Genesis fame.
That would be interesting, since he just did his final concert, I think, in the last week or so.
I didn't realize that.
Yeah, he's been having some serious health issues, so it might lift his spirits.
Damn.
Like you just break into his house and hold him hostage to play one final private concert.
But we're the ones who play it.
You sing every Genesis song to him in a medley. Yes, at him instead.
Inflicted upon.
Oh my God. Catherine, it's been a great pleasure chatting with you today. Let us know when Average Joe is streaming on BET Plus and where can we find you on social media if we want to correct you. We want to connect with you.
Yeah, absolutely. So Average Joe, episodes 1 and 2 are going to premiere on June 26th on BET Plus. You got to sign up for the streaming service, but they have a free trial, so hop to it. And then it's going to air every Thursday until the episodes are done. They're all going to kick ass. I cannot wait to see the rest of them. And you can find me lurking around. I don't know. I'm never in the same place more than once, but I'm on Instagram exclusively to troll my friends at Catherine Barnes. And yeah, you can find me. It's the internet.